Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Miguel Dean, who walks the path of the sacred masculine as a catalyst and holder of sacred space. He is a writer and the author of his latest book, Bring Him Home, A Twin Flame Love Story. Miguel was born in 1968 in Colchester, England, where he had a challenging start to his life. As a result of his early difficulties as a young adult, he spiraled down into a life of violence, petty crime, addiction, and homelessness. He spent 7 years living on the road as a New Age traveler until the love for his newborn son inspired and motivated him to begin to change his life and take personal responsibility for it. He began a challenging journey to return home to physical health and his inner union. His writing and healing are all in alignment with his passion to serve the transition into a more beautiful world for our children and the generations to come. Miguel, it's a pleasure to have you on today, and I really enjoyed our pre-interview discussion.
Hello, Georgiana. Yes, thank you. Thank you. It's a total pleasure to be here as well. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, it's believe me, the pleasure is all mine. And you, just for the listeners to know, you're calling in from England. You know, it sounds like a transatlantic call, and I love it. One of the sad things about technology is we've lost a lot of the nuances of kind of the way some things used to sound and smell and taste and look. And it's delightful to have you on. Now, are you on Skype by any chance?
Yes, I'm calling from Skype.
Terrific. Talk about technology. That stuff is amazing. So, Miguel, we had quite the conversation the other day about you and where you've been and where you've traveled from and to. And I would love for you, just to share with the audience the very beginning of your life, which started off. I mean, it was pretty tragic, pretty intense, with your mother dying of cancer when you were 7 months old. And I'm sure that had a lot of ramifications for you. So do you want to talk to us about it? You had shared about her depression and, something about your life and what happened after your mother died.
Yes, sure. I can I'll share a little bit of my story. So, yes, I was 7 months old. I had three brothers and sisters. My mother was Spanish. My father is English. And I know that my mother hadn't been, she had health issues, the depression, and I think she had a slipped disc and had issues with her back and was in a lot of pain a lot of the time. But then all of a sudden, on top of all this, it was, the cancer was diagnosed and 6 weeks later she was gone.
Wow.
So it all happened, yeah, but very, very suddenly, very suddenly. And, as you said, that's had massive ramifications for me. Not in a conscious way. I don't have any memory. In fact, I have very little memory of any of my childhood because it was quite the whole 16, 18 years were pretty traumatic to a certain extent. So I have very little conscious memory, but I began to piece together why things as an adult were running the way that they were, and in fact traced it all back to that very, that initial trauma, that initial wound that happened at 7 months.
And you said, a rather sad story came after that. Why don't you share that?
So my mom was gone. My dad, he needed to pay, go to work and keep, paying the mortgage, but he couldn't look after the kids at the same time. So myself and my brothers and sisters, we were looked after by various friends and relations. And I was looked after by my auntie and uncle. They didn't have their own child at this point. I was kind of like their first baby. So at 7 months old, my auntie's all of a sudden got a 7 month old baby very suddenly. And I know that they loved me unconditionally. And, I'm still in touch with them. And I know that that was a very precious time for them. But what then happened was that after a year and a half, my dad remarried. And so my brothers and sisters and I were all reunited with our new family, with our new stepmother. which meant that I was, of course, taken away, but from my auntie. So, you know, there will have been another sort of attachment trauma where I was taken, you know, I formed this attachment to my second mom, and then then it was gone again. So that was the second time. And then, you know, they say, well, three's a charm. So the third time I lost my mother was about 3 years later, when my stepmother gave birth to her own son with my dad. And, you know, he was the apple of her eye, and he was treated like a little prince, and myself and brothers and sisters were treated very differently. And so, you know, again, I lost the connection. I probably had the best connection with my stepmom because I was the youngest, you know, when she took us all on. But then once she had her own baby, you know, it was a very different story. And she became very angry and very abusive and very violent. You know, she had her own story and her own issues and so on. But the strain of bringing up somebody else's children and, a partner who was never there paid its toll, and it wasn't really a happy marriage, and she took all her anger and aggression out on us as children. So I grew up with very low self-esteem, feeling that I was never going to be worthy of anything, that I wasn't worthy of being loved, and essentially I was in fight and flight the whole time, you know, waiting for the next beating, waiting for the next telling off, waiting for the next volcano to erupt. So it wasn't an ideal start to life, shall we say, Georgiana.
And when you were sharing that, what became very clear was you were talking about, you know, kind of the classic reaction of what happens in this situation. You know, you left home, you didn't have a good self-worth or self-esteem, you wanted to get away from the hurt and the abuse. And like so many young people, especially who leave home or who run away from home, they get themselves into very bad environments because they don't realize how vulnerable they are. They don't realize how the world is going to prey on their vulnerability. And so you went out and into the world and you found your way into drugs and violence and crime and homelessness. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about, you know, what happened to you? Because when did you leave home? 16 or 17? And so you were a young adult. And what kind of situations did you find yourself in?
Yeah, I was 18 years old when I left home. What I now understand, of course, is that because the unconscious beliefs were, you know, that I was not worthy and so on, and that I wasn't a good person, I was attracted to creating that environment that would give me that information back, that would confirm those beliefs. So what happened to me was, I guess I discovered drugs was kind of the first thing, getting high and being able to avoid the kind of feelings of, you know, just the low self-esteem and so on, and an altered state, a way of escaping, a way of numbing. And I ended up sort of totally by chance, you know, as a new age traveler living on the road, living in buses, living in sort of makeshift tents and caravans and converted trucks and stuff like this. And that community was very, it was kind of made up of misfits, you know, from society, really, that had had a bad experience with society or, you know, their childhood and whatever, and that just kind of opted out. But with such a bunch of people with so many wounds and so on, and so much drugs, the violence was very rife. I was repeatedly would kind of, you know, wake up in the morning covered in bruises and broken things because I'd been beaten up. But, you know, I didn't usually remember what had happened. And I did have a truck for a while, but then, you know, that broke down, and I was just too disorganized to mend it. So I started begging on the streets and living in a caravan that had no windows in the middle of winter. And it just all got, and I was getting increasingly iller and iller, really, with the amount of toxins I was putting inside my body, you know, to try and numb the pain from my childhood, and things got worse and worse.
So what happened? I mean, it must have reached a crescendo, or was this when you became a father? What was the impetus for the change that ultimately took place? You shared something. You said that You did make a connection again with your aunt and uncle in your later 20s, and you started to put together in your mind how your upbringing and, you know, what happened to you as a young person was really connected to how you were feeling, your behavior, your condition. So what was the real turning point?
The real turning point was the birth of my son. I was still living on the road at the time. I'd a new relationship with the mother of my son, and it wasn't planned, but in my mind I knew I wasn't happy. You know, a lot of my friends had been dying of overdoses and car crashes and suicides, and things had been getting really unpleasant. And when you get into drugs, you kind of initially you take drugs to feel good, but then after a while you have to take the drugs just to feel normal, and then then you have to increase the dose or increase the type of drug that you're taking just to feel sort of normal and get through the day. And I increasingly wasn't feeling. It was like the drugs weren't working anymore, and I was unhappy and miserable and stressed and angry and needy. And then when I had my son, I remember thinking, well, you know, perhaps this will be the thing that, you know, that turns it all around like a magic wand. You know, everything will get better from here. Because, yeah, there's something. I always had this sense, Georgiana, that I always felt like a boy in a man's body. It's quite hard to sort of articulate beyond that. But I hoped that becoming a father would take away that feeling, and I would, you know, and I would feel differently about myself. But it didn't. But it didn't. It made things worse. It was a catalyst. You know, my partner was then very busy giving all her attention, you know, to the newborn baby. And I got worse and worse, and ended up, I woke up one morning and I thought, you know something, Miguel, you'd probably be better off just walking away from this situation, because what are you bringing to the table? You're miserable. You know, you're just hard work, and your son would probably be better brought up as a single, you know, with just his mom being and a single parent. But we'd had this conversation months earlier when things had been getting worse and worse. And I said, you know, I'll try everything. And I was really trying to be a better person, get off the drugs. And I was trying to change everything on the outside, you know. And I'd said to my partner, if nothing else tries, I will even try counseling. So that morning that I woke up with those thoughts, it was like, okay, my back's to the wall, but I need to try this, you know. I need to try this counseling thing before I walk away, because otherwise I could regret it for the rest of my life, thinking, what if the counseling had helped?
Right, and you were not a big fan of counseling. You've described it in a way that said, you know, this is really isn't going to work. How could talking to somebody make a difference in my life? But what the heck? I kind of have to give it a shot, and you took it from there.
Yeah, I wasn't. You know, I'd been living kind of outside the system for 7 years. You know, I'd had nothing to do with. I kind of missed computers coming on, you know, arriving, and mobile phones, and you know, I haven't been registered with a, you know, health practitioner or anything. You know, so to sort of go back into the system and ask for help from somebody, as you say, you know, it just felt like having a chat with someone. How on earth is that really gonna, you know, turn this terrible mess and this angst that I have inside myself, how is that going to help? But it did. He was kind of like my guardian, my second guardian angel, really, with my firstborn son being the first, and the male counselor. For the first time, you know, somebody asked me about my childhood, and somebody listened and somebody cared. You know, up until that point, I'd never connected how I was feeling with what was happening, what had happened as a child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How long were you in counseling with your partner, and where did it go from there? Because you wound up spending 15 years together, right?
Yeah, it was. The counseling was just on my own. My partner didn't go. It was very clear that it was me that had the problem. So it was me that went to counseling. But there were kind of like a succession of light bulb moments. I was only there for about 3 months. But in that time, I realized that three things. I decided I'm going to get married because I want to show a commitment to my son and to this woman, and that, you know, that I'm going to not just going to walk away when things get difficult. I decided that I needed to move into a house, and that we needed somewhere safe, and we needed some stability in order to do this inner work that I now, you know, began to see that I had to do. And the third thing was I decided to go back to school, back to college, and because I wanted to be a counsellor. I was so blown away by the impact that this man had had on me that for the first time, I thought, what if I do have some value? What if I could make a difference to people's lives like that man has done for me? So I signed on a college and began a counselling qualification. We moved into a house and we got married.
Okay, and that was the beginning of a very different life. It was a departure from where you had been up mm-hmm. to this point in your life, and you made a commitment to it.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a huge leap. What do you credit? I mean, look, a counselor doesn't change anybody. Doctors don't heal people, and counselors don't change people. It's the individual within themselves that actually surrender and yield and want that change. So what do you think it was for you that, you know, really gave you the strength and the fortitude? That was a big leap to go from living like a gypsy to getting married, settling down, and raising a child. What do you attribute that to? Was that the beginning of your spiritual journey? Because ultimately you identify that you were really on a spiritual journey.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it was the beginning of my spiritual journey, really. Without a doubt, you know, sort of just entering this realm of the unconscious and the anima and animus and the, you know, and recognizing that, learning about my egoic self and all that sort of stuff. That was very much the beginning. The main answer, I think, to your question is I'd like it to feel a little bit more sort of self-flattering, but I think essentially, you know, Georgiana, it was the push away from the pain. It my life had become so dark and I was getting so ill that, you know, I had to do something. As I said, you know, friends were dying, and it was like either I'm going to go down this spiral into this really dark place, or, you know, I give this my best shot and I, you know, try and do something about it. And my son, I guess, was, you know, a really powerful motivation for that. You know, I wanted to be the father to my son that my father hadn't been to me. And there was the beginning of that wanting to heal and break sort of generational patterns and just do things differently. There's always been some sort of resilience and drive in me. You know, I don't give up easily. I've been knocked down so many times in my life, but I get back up. And but there's a stubbornness in me, Georgiana. I think that might be part of it.
Well, it sounds like you had a very strong desire to survive. You had a strong instinct to live, mm-hmm. and you also had the resilience to be able to execute that, to execute your desire for change, which is really quite a wonderful and remarkable story. And we're about to take our first break, and I wanted to bring the audience up to the point where, you know, you went through all this early trauma, lots and lots of trauma, and then lots and lots of depression and self-abuse, and you got to a point where you had an intervention by life. Life made you a father. And so you took that opportunity, you utilized that opportunity as a way forward for yourself, which was quite wonderful. And then, you know, you did start, you know, that we'll talk about after the break, you did start to, make a really new career for yourself. You went to college, you started to do counseling qualifications, and you became a teacher using counseling skills. So when we come back from the break, let's talk about those 15 years of kind of recovery for you, and then where those 15 years led you to, because those years, those subsequent years led you to write your book and to have your journey. So when we come back, Miguel, we will look forward to hearing about, you know, how you really kind of sorted yourself out. In your words, you said, I sorted myself out for 15 years in the marriage and with your education and what have you. So when we come back, we will continue the conversation. And listeners, don't go away. We will be back in a moment with more discussion with Miguel.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donatio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donatio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donatio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And today I'm talking to Miguel Dean, who is the author of Bring Him Home. And he is also sharing with us his incredible story of his journey of his early years to his later years, from being a victim to being a healer. And it's a very exciting and fascinating story, Miguel. Tell us a little bit about those 15 years of your marriage when you were raising your son, and how that evolved for you and brought you to where you are today.
Yes. I think it's worth mentioning that at the beginning, you know, after during the counseling sessions, one of the first things that happened was that as I was bringing up and talking about these things from my childhood for the first time, it all manifested in my body. I was quite ill before, but I got really ill. It was like I was covered from head to toe in this really sort of itchy red soreness and so on. And so as the emotions were released, they manifested in my body. My skin has always been my sort of Achilles heel. And I got very ill. So I went in search of different, alternative remedies. I didn't have a lot of faith in allopathic medicine and doctors and so on. So, I began exploring meditation and relaxation techniques and herbalism and homeopathy and, stress relief and all these different sort of modalities and different spiritual teachers. And I had this massive thirst for knowledge and wisdom, and began to devour lots of different spiritual texts and personal development sort of material, the Wayne Dyers and Marianne Williamsons and Ram Dasses and all these people. I couldn't get enough of it. And at the same time, I started working with people. I began my sort of proper jobs once I'd come off the road, working with disadvantaged youth, with homeless youngsters. And then that moved on into the education system, working in colleges. And during that time, I was always at college in the evening myself, learning, doing another course, improving my, options, my different qualifications, so that my different, making my toolkit bigger. But my toolkit bigger to help and to serve. But one of the most significant thing that happened in that time was that I realized that there was a direct correlation between how much I healed and how much better I felt about myself in relation to how much I contributed to others. So, I began to see how everything was interconnected and that you can't heal. I don't believe that you can heal or you can heal as well or totally in isolation. The healing happens in our relationship with others and our connection and dropping deeper into the relationship of life itself. So that was something that was really, very powerful and profound. And of course, led me into this world of spirituality and understanding that what we perceive with our senses is perhaps not the full story. And what I can conceive with my mind is perhaps, what lies beyond the doors of perception and all this, the really interesting questions of who am I and all this stuff really sort of started coming up for me.
Did we lose you?
No. Okay. You were going to say something.
Oh, I just wanted to say I love what you said. Life beyond the doors of perception. I think that's a wonderful expression because, perception is everything. I was listening to a show on CNN this morning, and it was interviewing six different people who had watched a political presentation, mm-hmm. and it was remarkable. You talk about beyond the doors of perception, how these six different people all had completely different perceptions of what was actually being seen and what was being watched.
Yeah.
So isn't that our challenge, Miguel, dealing with our perception and the reality of what we're surrounded by?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I have to say, Georgiana, I can't really take full credit for the phrase. I think it's Aldous Huxley from his book Beyond the Doors of Perception. I think that's where I've borrowed that from.
Oh, there you go. But it's a wonderful expression because, look, we all have these lives filled with unique perspective, and that perception and that perspective comes from our experience. So recognizing that we somehow have to untangle ourselves from the most powerful imprint, which is the first 5-6 years of our life, to go on and start a life by, as you say, sorting ourselves out. It's a challenge, and it sounds like you've done it so incredibly well. So here you are, you're coming to the end of your 15 years of marriage. You've been reading, you've been getting educated, you've been studying, you've been pursuing the understanding that everything is connected to everything else. You're starting to become, the popular expression today is woke. You're starting to become woke, you're becoming aware. And yet at the same time, you became dissatisfied in your marriage, and you said that your attention started to wander. So why don't you talk to us about the end of your 15 years, what was going on for you, and what that led you to?
Yeah, my attention began to wander, and I just noticed I was being more interested in other women, and it was like, and I guess that was the real beginning of when I began to really, really get down to the roots of the trauma that I'd been carrying, which was that I had been trying to find, I'd been trying to replace and heal my mother wound through the relationships with my romantic partners, who are really my wife. And, it got to this point that I wasn't totally fully aware of that at that stage, but I left the marriage because it was like, okay, I need to leave this before there's somebody else involved, because the lovers, is not there. We're arguing a lot. So I need to walk away and do the honourable thing, as it were, rather than it get all messy and have affairs and all that sort of stuff. Because I think I still believe that to some extent that the next woman, the next relationship would make me whole or would bring me home. I still had that program running. I wasn't still fully aware that what I was really seeking was, to heal that mother wound, and that I had to find that within myself and heal that within myself, rather than expect a woman to sort of plug that gap and put a band-aid over that wound that I was carrying.
Well, I have to tell you, at that point, I mean, of course, you were in your late 30s, maybe early 40s, because you were 28 when you had a baby, you were married for 15 years, so you were a grown-up guy at that point, let's just say approximately 40 years old. And to come to that understanding of realizing that your initial traumas and repeated traumas was the loss of the mother figure, and that what you were trying to do, I mean, there are so many men who stagger around, women too, who stagger around blindly, not realizing they're looking for their father or looking for their mother to heal that inner trauma. And it's pretty remarkable that you came to that you understood that. And I'm assuming that all your reading and your studying and your spirituality brought you to that point. So you said to yourself, and the mother of your child, this isn't working. Did the relationship end amicably? Did you stay in touch with your son? How did you transfer out of that marriage?
It was as amicable, as it could be. That we were both hurt and so on, but we both made a very strong commitment that the children would suffer as little as possible, as a result. And so, yeah, I just moved up the road, and my sons would come and stay with me regularly, as they have done until they've, turned into men themselves and are now doing their own thing.
So you have two. You had another child. How many children did you have?
Yeah, I had two. I had another son 5 years after the first one.
Okay. So, and I assume you still today have a good relationship with your children.
Yeah. I have a good relationship with my sons. Yeah.
Wonderful. So you dissolved your marriage. You moved up the road, started your life over, and you had shared that you had a couple of new long-term relationships that also did not work out.
Yeah. And can I just backtrack 1 second, Georgiana?
Sure.
It's really funny. I haven't talked about some of this for a little while, and I'm remembering. But yeah, so I was divorced, and then just at that point, it just so happened that I decided to leave my full-time job and start working independently, start working self-employed for myself. And that the divorce happened very sort of suddenly, and then it was like all of a sudden there was no safety net, there was no partnership and I was out on my own with a new business to set up, going through the divorce, and then freeze a charm, I was diagnosed with hepatitis C. So I then underwent a load of medication and treatment for 6 months, which is a kind of like mild form of chemotherapy, while I was recovering from the divorce and while I was trying to start my business, so I got incredibly ill from the, you know, from the ribavirin and interferon from the drugs that I had to inject myself with to get rid of the hepatitis C, which I probably picked up in the years when I'd been living on the road. So that was my, it was kind of like my second, you know, a real big fall where life really brought me down to my knees and I had to really sort of rebuild everything and start again from scratch, working for myself, getting over the divorce and getting my health back again.
Right. So that was another wake up transitional period. And during that time, were you having your relationships during that time or was it after you recovered?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the recovery was sort of, you know, was gradual. I had, I guess in the, you see, I sometimes describe myself, I was a bit of a serial monogamist in that, you know, because of what had happened as a child, I it was so uncomfortable for me to be single and to be on my own. So I did, you know, not too long after the divorce, probably about 6 months after the divorce, I began another relationship which lasted a couple of years. And then I had another relationship that fell apart because, again, I was looking for my mother, you know, and I still wasn't really dealing with that, the real roots. And then I had another relationship that lasted for 5 years. And it was at the end of that one that I really, I really said to myself, okay, no more. You know, I tried the easy way of, I kept trying to convince myself that I could feel good and heal myself through this relationships with woman. But it was at that point that I was really brought to my knees again. And I said, okay, no more. And I kind of said to God, if you like, you know, okay, whatever it is that needs to be done now, I'm ready. I will do it. I need to heal this once and for all because I'm not having another relationship and going through, you know, what I've been through. It's like, bring it on. I stay here and come hell or high water, I'm ready. I really am ready now.
What was it for you? I mean, we all, for those of us who take a journey as you've taken to kind of self-discovery and into kind of an actualization, what was it for you? Was it the sense of failure? Was it the sense of rejection, sadness, the sense of not being filled up? What was the feeling or the experience that actually led you to a place where you said, okay, no more. I gotta figure this out on my own without the help of a partner, without the support of another person in my life. Do you recall or do you know what it was specifically? What was that tipping point for you that, you know, really surrendered yourself to the process of self-discovery?
Yeah, I think that it's, I remember looking a little bit at your book and the pain pleasure principle. I think it was really a combination of that. You know, there was this push away from pain. It was like, I can't go through this anymore. Because you see, every time I ended a relationship came to an end, it wasn't, there were two layers for me. It was the relationship as for a man losing his partner, but more significantly, it brought to the surface all the trauma of my childhood. So it was the death, every time I lost a relationship, it was the death of my mother was relived all over again. So it was incredibly painful. And I saw that, you know, I seem to struggle with breakups more than most people. It just used to hit me so hard. And I, you know, it was at this point I was realizing this is because this is, you're reliving and releasing the trauma from, you know, that you weren't able to when you were a baby, those three times when you lost your mum. So it was a real push away from pain. And of course, by this time as well, you know, I've been doing so much reading and so much experiential learning and workshops and retreats that I knew that there was something else. It was like, you know, there was this nirvana, there was this peace, there was this love that I'd been reading about. And it was like, I want some of this. I need some of this. It's my time.
Well, that isn't a pain like an incredibly fulfilling, an incredibly satisfying experience when we get to the other side of it. because we realize that pain is a tremendous motivator. Yeah, the just to remind the listeners, I'm sure many of them know, I wrote a book called Changing Behavior, and Miguel was referring to the first chapter, which you can download for free, by the way. If you go to www.changingbehavior.com, you can download that first chapter. And he was talking about the pain-pleasure experience. And without pain, our pleasure isn't the same. And without pleasure, we don't have the experience of information and really inner growth that we can get from pain. So here you are. You were free at last. You were out from under. You had three major relationships under your belt. You lost your mother three times. You woke up and said, no more. I'd rather just kind of see what happens and take care of this problem myself, realizing that a woman cannot, no one can really heal us or fulfill us. They can facilitate that, but they can't really do it. So were you in a neutral position? Were you kind of in an okay state to move forward?
Yeah, I was in a neutral-ish place, because, you know, there was still a discomfort with being on my own. You know, it still felt like there was this great big hole with, you know, that couldn't be filled, and there was always kind of this background anxiety that kind of felt like it was on the peripheral of my awareness. You know, being single, being by myself, not having you know, feminine energy around me. So I was in a neutral-ish place. But, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, once I'd made that commitment to, you know, to healing this once and for all, in the most synchronicitous way, I actually met another woman, and I began a relationship with her. And this is the woman who facilitated, if you like, the final pieces of the healing and the real deep healing that needed to be released. And that's why, you know, that this group really brings us to the beginning of the book, Bringing Home a Twin Flame Love Story. And I think it's important for me to state that although there are two levels, what the book is really about is the bringing home is me being brought home to myself, me coming home to myself, and the twin flame, you know, the union of the masculine and feminine within me, the healing of that feminine wound that was inside of me. So that was what, you know, that it brought me to that place, the beginning of my real coming home. Because I think a lot of people, you know, still under the sort of Hollywood romance idea that, you know, another person will complete us. And I knew that this wasn't true, and I knew that, you know, already knew by this stage. But, you know, the journey with this woman was what really profoundly gave me such a series of real direct experiences of how relationship can bring us home to ourselves. We can learn about ourselves through relationship, as long as we're not looking and projecting outwards and expecting the other one to complete us. They can help us to complete ourselves. That's the key thing.
Exactly, precisely. When I first spoke to you, you were speaking very passionately about you know, the feminine energy. And you talked a lot about how that imbalance in your life has really been the healing factor. When we come back, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, I'm really going to ask you to take a deep dive then into what you talked about, which is how, when, if we can be present to ourselves, when we're given a relationship that you call the twin flame, how we can utilize that relationship to learn and to experience what we need to know, which is unique from any other being. You experienced what you needed to know because of your interaction with this woman, who I believe is still in your life, yes?
She is still in my life, yes. Yes, she certainly is.
Wonderful. Well, when we come back with Miguel, we are going to hear his story, which is quite romantic, and if I might add, a little erotic. So don't go anywhere. Don't miss the good stuff. We'll be right back.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
I am speaking with Miguel Dean, who is sharing his remarkable story as a writer, as a teacher, as an educator, and as a man who has discovered his own new masculinity. And he's been sharing different parts of his story with us. And Miguel, before the break, I talked about, you know, inviting you to really share, number one, the relationship that the universe gave you to use as the final facilitation for your own process, and to talk about sacred masculinity. which is a wonderful concept. I know it's been about for a little while, but to talk to us about the sacred masculinity that you've discovered, and that I think is kind of the focus of your teaching and your writing, yes?
Yes, yeah, absolutely, yeah. The sacred masculine it feels like it's something that I sort of stumbled across, really. But it was stumbled across through this relationship that, you know, that I would say that the journey is always ongoing, but I'm at a place where I am pretty whole and complete unto myself. I don't carry this wound or this anxiety or this, sense of incompleteness. I'm at peace, so much more at peace with myself. And the relationship becomes a bonus, you know, it's icing on the cake. It's something extra. It's not something that's needed. So the sacred masculine, yeah, I mean, the sacred masculine is a man who sees that service is part of, you know, who he is. Mother Teresa said, the trouble with the world is that we draw the circle of the family too small. And I totally agree with that. And what I would say is that the sacred masculine sees the whole of humanity as his family, and that, you know, a good man can perhaps provide for his family and take care of them and so on. But it comes to a point where I just know that the more I serve, the more I am in alignment with the truth of who I really am. And that because we're all connected, what I do and contribute to others, I'm contributing to myself anyway. So that's, you know, that's a really key part of sacred masculinity. And this knowing, I've coined the phrase, without the sacred, all masculinity is incomplete. Because
that's it, boy, and that really is true. And I'm sure men who are listening to this deep down inside kind of know that they're searching for something if they don't have that sense of their own sacred masculinity. And it's incredibly important that you point that out. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, that's okay. And a little plug from me that I do, you know, I work with men and with women in my one-to-one sessions around, you know, deepening and finding the sacred masculine. And sometimes it's working with women to heal the masculine wounds that they've suffered from their fathers. So this is, you know, all become woven into, you know, through my own journey and being able to travel that ground. I now have a kind of roadmap. I have a map that I can guide others through that terrain as well.
You also said something that I want to share, which I think is really so poignant. You said serving other people, getting outside of yourself and really facilitating other people and serving them has been the most healing thing in your life. And we do know, and it is said, especially when you're recovering from a great loss or a breakup or a despondency, is that when we turn our attention outward towards others, we're really healing ourselves, because then we realize that everything is connected. The intentionality of helping, serving, caring is actually something that, as we're experiencing that organic process of intention and, you know, helping other people, we're sending a message to our own body. We're sending a message to our own heart. And that message is what's healing us. And isn't that what you had experienced?
That's absolutely it, Georgiana. That was it. It was this. Yeah, it was really quite magical, really, you know. It was, you know, I stumbled across it again, but it just became, I guess it's become a sort of, you know, central pillar to the way that I operate, because it's when we're operating from that place, when what we do arises from love, then it's always going to have a massive impact, and we're operating from the higher self rather than the egoic self, and rather than from the wounded self and the sort of place of separation. It's just shifting. It's a whole paradigm shift, really, isn't it? And just seeing everything through a completely different lens of the higher self, if you like.
Absolutely. I can't believe we only have a little bit of time left. So we're going to do a fast forward. You said romance is part of the process. It's the hook. It's the seduction that gets us to do the work. It's the sacred act. And you wrote in your book that your book talked about all of this, plus the erotic and the passionate, in terms of giving and honoring the divine in women, and that, you know, you and I talked about that as females, what we're looking for from men is to connect to the divine through the act of the physicality. And you were saying the same thing, which is really, I do have to congratulate you, because there are very few men who would actually say, wow. They would say it the way a woman would say it. It's really about connecting to the divine and all that romance and all that eroticism and all of that, you know, wonderful, those wonderful feelings. They're really about bringing us. They're the hook that brings us to our divine and complete and whole self. And so we only have a moment to touch upon the woman who was sent to you. You were sent this woman, and she was sent you. And you've kind of had, I think what you described was, again, it was that on-again, off-again thing that was going on in your life, but that it settled down into a relationship. And now you feel you have your own wholeness, but you also have this wonderful, is it a romantic relationship? Is it a friendship? Is it a combination of all of those wonderful things?
Yeah, it's a combination of all of those things, really. And you know, I want to be totally honest and say it's still a work in progress. You know, it's not, I don't want to do the Hollywood thing and say, you know, now it's just like, you know, rainbows and unicorns and fluffy pink clouds all the time. We're still, you know, we still have work to do, and we still sort of fall out sometimes, but we can see, we know the purpose of relationship, and we know that it's healing, you know, that we still have, there are still other layers, and there are still deeper places to explore and so on, to continue the self-actualization process, I guess.
Right. And I think, and I shared with you in my own life, you know, in I have a deep friendship with a gentleman who I at one time had a relationship with. And what is really special is that we both know that there is this connection, and that the connection is on a very different level other than just the romantic or the physical. It's really a human to human, a soul to soul, a person to person connection. And I think when any relationship, even if there is romance and, you know, affection involved, when any relationship gets to that point, isn't that coming home? Isn't that knowing that there's another human being that has your back? It's really funny, because intimacy, it really isn't sexual. It's being with a person who loves you and cares about you and is there to have your back and is there to make the journey companionable and supported. Would you agree?
I would agree totally. And what I would also add is that a key part of intimacy for me is the courage to be vulnerable.
Yes, absolutely. And boy, isn't, and that's true of all of us. I mean, the courage to be vulnerable. I cannot believe I'm looking at the clock. I cannot believe we have used every single second of our time. I have to say, Miguel, this has been a wonderful interview. You're an extraordinary gentleman, and you're doing wonderful work. I want to remind the listeners, Miguel has a website, www.miguel.dean.net. And he also has, what do you call Love in Action? Is that the teaching work that you're doing? Is that the...
Love in Action at migueldean.co.uk. That is my email address. And yeah, you know, that's the balance of the masculine and feminine for me. The love, the softness, the tenderness, but the action, the more doing and proactive of the masculine. We bring those together and we can achieve amazing things.
Well, you have written something deeply important, and you have had a tremendous journey. I congratulate you. Celebrate your journey. I hope everyone gets a chance through the course of their reading and their listening and podcasting to hear your story. It's a wonderful, wonderful story, especially for men, because I don't think men really get to talk about this stuff. So thank you, Miguel, so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Thank you. Thank you, Georgiana. Yeah, likewise, it's been wonderful to be here. And I hope that my book, Bring Him Home, A Twin Flame Love Story, touches many hearts and brings much healing.
Thank you. And listeners, don't forget to join us again next week for another inspiring, educational, and uplifting story here on Living Above the Drama.